Nothing brings the spirit of the season into our hearts quite like a great holiday movie.
Have yourself a merry little Christmas. Let your heart be light. Next year all our troubles will be out of sight.
Christmas films come in many shapes and sizes and exist across many genres. Some, like It's a Wonderful Life and A Christmas Story, are perennials, while others, such as Die Hard, have only gradually become Yuletide favorites. But they all have one thing in common. They use themes evoked by the holiday period. Nostalgia, joy, togetherness, dysfunction, commercialism, even cynicism, as a force in their storytelling. Film historian Jeremy Arnold's revised and updated book, Christmas in the Movies, 35 Classics to Celebrate the Season, showcases the very best among this uniquely spirited strain of cinema. Each film is profiled on what makes it a Christmas movie, along with behind-the-scenes stories of its production, reception, and legacy. It is a pleasure to talk holiday cinema with Jeremy Arnold, and we welcome him to the roundtable this morning. Jeremy, thank you very much for being with us.
Oh, thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
How did the collection come to be?
Well, I had done a book for Turner Classic Movies and Running Press, their publishing partner, called The Essentials, a couple of years ago. And this idea for a Christmas movie book came to me from the same place as my editor at Running Press had been talking to TCM about this idea, and she thought I'd be good for it. And I was really interested in the possibility of exploring how different kinds of movies use Christmas to tell their stories, not just necessarily the ones that we all already know and love, but some others that are maybe a little more subtle and a little different that would still be nice for people to discover.
That is very deliberate on your part, I assume, in the title of Christmas in the Movies as opposed to Christmas Movies.
Yeah, you know, I was thinking about this recently, that I don't know that there really is any Christmas movie that is technically about Christmas. I mean, they're all really about other things, but they use Christmas as a way of telling their stories. You know, their romances or their family dramas, or they're about the commercialism or cynicism of the holiday. They're action movies or westerns even, but they, you know, having Christmas in them that somehow informs the characters and our experience of the story. That's really the key.
The first time this book came out, it included 30 classics. It now includes 35. At what point did you realize that it needed to be revised and expanded?
While I was writing the original edition. And the reason I say that is because it was clear at the time that Turner Classic Movies and Running Press, who are sort of are partnered with a series of film books, including this one, they wanted something sort of compact, like a Christmas present, a morsel of a Christmas present that would be out for the holiday season. And there just wasn't enough room to include all the movies that I was discovering and wanted to, or to include more, say, analytical writing, you know, beyond just the 30 titles in that original edition. One thing that I am regretting a little bit about this new one is that I changed the 30 classics to celebrate the season to 35. It really should have just come out altogether, because there are far more than five more movies covered in this book. I have many new sections and essays scattered throughout that delve into dozens of other films, not to the same degree as the 35 that get full chapters, but there are still some very significant ones in there.
One of the things that I found interesting about your book, and I had a weird fascination with looking this up on each entry, is release dates. Because you would just think that a movie that revolved around Christmas would often be released around the holidays, and that just isn't the case, especially for a lot of the older films.
Yeah, I mean, I think it pretty much is the case today, because now Christmas movies have become, you know, a more conscious sort of genre in the eyes of, you know, studios and filmmakers. But back in the 30s and 40s and 50s, back in those days, there were some movies that were also incorporated the holiday and were released at Christmas time. But you're right, there were many that were not. including one of the most beloved of them all, Miracle on 34th Street.
She's a little confused, and I thought maybe you could help to straighten her out.
I'll be glad to.
Would you please tell her that you're not really Santa Claus? That there actually is no such person?
Well, I'm sorry to disagree with you, Mrs. Walker, but not only is there such a person, but here I am to prove it.
No, no, no. You misunderstand. I want you to tell her the truth. What's your name?
Chris Kringle. I'll bet you're in the first grade.
Second.
I mean your real name.
That is my real name. Second grade?
It's a progressive school.
Oh, it's a progressive school.
So what is the thought behind releasing that movie in the summer?
Oh, well, in that case, the studio, Fox, they thought that they had, well, I won't say they thought they had a stinker, but they had no idea that they had such an audience-friendly, heartwarming film on their hands. And so they released it in the summertime because they thought it would have a better chance at the box office, because then, as now, that's the height of the movie-going season. And they didn't even use any Christmas imagery in the advertising or the posters.
What is it about that movie? I will admit that I think this is my favorite film of all time. I watched it again two nights ago. I watch it several times each season. It is funny. It has it's sharp. It has a little wink and a nod, and yet it is sentimental, and it always makes me cry.
Yeah, it's a favorite of mine too. And I think the secret behind that film is that it's doing several sets of two things at once, by which I mean it appeals to children as well as to adults equally. Because, you know, on the one hand, it explores this rite of passage that, you know, millions of kids go through, which is believing in Santa Claus. On the other hand, and without this part, it would be overly saccharine. But it also, from the adult perspective, it is very much about sort of cynicism and the commercialism of the holiday. That's actually what inspired the writer to originally write the movie. He was distressed at all the commercialism he saw going around him.
Well, here's a list of toys that we have to push, you know, things that we're overstocked on. Now, you'll find that a great many children will be undecided as to what they want for Christmas. When that happens, you immediately suggest one of these items. You understand?
I certainly do.
Good. Now, you memorize that list, and I'll... Oh, never mind. I'll tell you. When you've finished, come up to the seventh floor. I'll be waiting for you.
Imagine making a child take something it doesn't want just because he bought too many of the wrong toys. That's what I've been fighting against for years, the way they commercialize Christmas.
Yeah, there's a lot of bad isms floating around this world, but one of the worst is commercialism. Make a buck, make a buck. Even in Brooklyn, it's the same. Don't care what Christmas stands for. Just make a buck, make a buck.
But in movie terms, and this is what I'm most fascinated by, it works simultaneously as a fantasy and as realism. Because if you believe that Kris Kringle is Santa Claus, then the movie is a fantasy. But if you believe that he's just sort of a crazy guy who thinks he's Santa Claus, that he's psychologically unhinged, then it's a piece of sort of comedy realism. And it works both ways all throughout the movie. It's just an ingenious script.
You write in your section on this that Macy's in the city of New York granted permission to shoot the 1946 Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade. So what we see at the beginning of that film is the actual Macy's parade.
Oh, yes. They had the director, George Seaton, had 14 cameras set up along Central Park West and Broadway. And he shot the 1946 parade, and all those shots were real on location. Even the shots where you see John Payne and Natalie Wood inside an apartment looking out a window at the parade, that was a real apartment right on the parade route.
It did receive, as you say, they thought it may be a stinker. It received pretty good reviews, though, right?
It did, yeah. It was a classic sleeper. A sleeper is basically a movie that comes out of nowhere to be a commercial success that audiences find for themselves. And the studio is often bewildered, and then they quickly, you know, rush to capitalize on it and keep the promotion going. And, you know, the sleeper still happened today, but this is one of the most famous sleepers because it went on to become really one of the most beloved and still revived movies of all time. The thing is, when you have a popular Christmas movie, it never dies because every 12 months people like to revisit these things.
I never really doubted you. It was just my silly common sense.
It even makes sense to believe in me now. I must be a pretty good lawyer. I'd take a little old man and legally prove to the world that he's Santa Claus. Now, you know that...
No, it can't be. It must have been left here by the people that moved out.
Maybe. Maybe I didn't do such a wonderful thing after all.
Jeremy Arnold is our guest. The book is Christmas in the Movies, a revised and expanded edition, 35 classics to celebrate the season. You have an entry in the book about, of course, another film that came out just before Miracle on 34th Street, of It's a Wonderful Life. I like It's a Wonderful Life, but it is a very dreary film, isn't it?
Well, I wouldn't use the word dreary,
okay.
But I would say traumatic. I mean, it's dark.
It is really dark.
She's hung up.
I'll hang her up.
Hey, you, I'll knock you up.
What is that? Hello, who's this? Oh, Mr. Welch. Okay, that's fine, Mr. Wells. Give me a chance to tell you what I really think of your wife.
George,
will you
George.
Get out and let me handle this? Hello. Hello. What? Oh, you will, huh? Okay, Mr. Wells, anytime you think you're man enough, you... Hello. Any...
Dad, how do you spell hallelujah?
How should I know? What do you think I am, a dictionary? Tommy, stop that. Stop it. Janie, haven't you learned that silly tune yet? You play it over and over again. Now stop it! Stop it!
This is a much darker movie than people tend to remember because it also has one of the most joyous endings, you know, of any movie ever made. But we have to go through a lot of dark places to get there and get that release, just like Jimmy Stewart does in the story. But I think it's just such a beautifully crafted movie, from the writing, directing, cinematography, the costumes even. The snow in that film was so innovatively designed that the special effects team won a Technical Academy Award for it. It's a Wonderful Life, to me, is the ultimate Christmas movie because it uses the holiday in pretty much every way that you can, to heighten the joy and the family togetherness, to explore family dysfunction, to explore the despair and the loneliness that is really a part of the season for many of us at some points in our lives. I mean, Christmas tends to exacerbate the highs and the lows that we naturally feel at this time of year. And I just think It's Wonderful Life uses Christmas in such a smart way through that prism that's why it's the ultimate one for me.
Yay! Hello, Bedford Falls!
Merry Christmas!
Merry Christmas,
George! Merry Christmas, movie house! Merry Christmas, Emporium! Merry Christmas, you wonderful old building alone!
You read this book and you think to yourself, wow, I didn't know that John Wayne was in a Christmas movie.
You're the one that found me.
Yes, ma'am.
Will you save my baby?
Yes, ma'am. I'll save him.
And I will help.
Me too, ma'am.
I want you, all of you, to be my baby's godfathers.
That's right. That's three godfathers, which
yes.
is a John Ford Western. And, you know, this is actually so interesting to me. I don't really think Christmas movies are a genre, or at least back then they weren't. I don't think that studios are saying, we're going to make a Christmas movie, like they'd say, we're going to make a musical or we're going to make a Western. Three Godfathers is a Western, but, you know, when Christmas sort of invades a movie, especially if it's a well-established type of film like a John Wayne, John Ford Western, this is the kind of movie you're going to get. I mean, the film starts off as, you know, three bad guys are being chased into the desert, and then suddenly they discover a baby. Well, they discover a woman who's about to give birth in the desert, and they help deliver the baby. And then their mission changes to, we've got to get this baby across the desert to safety. And that's what the movie turns into. So it's sort of like Christmas, in a way, enters the story and shifts everything. And it's a very beautiful, sensitively done film. And it also just works as a very satisfying Western, and it's full of humor and a lot of drama. It's a great film, very underrated.
And there's a point in the film where nobody's chasing anybody, and it's just John Wayne, a baby, and suddenly we're at the piano and we're hearing Silent Night.
Merry
Merry Christmas to all. Set him up, bartender. Milk for the infant and a cool, cool beer for me.
Actually, that scene in the saloon where we're hearing the Christmas music, the pianist is played by the film's composer, which is a nice touch.
Very nice touch. There are a lot of films in here that I guess, and I know that this is talked about a lot of films that, as you say, wouldn't be considered Christmas movies, but take place around the time. Die Hard, of course, being one of them, and the eternal debate is Die Hard a Christmas movie. I guess it's not something you would put in to watch to get into the spirit.
Now I have a machine gun.
Ho, ho.
And yet, it delivers, doesn't it?
Oh, I think so. And, you know, it's actually really interesting because when I said a few minutes ago that Christmas movies have become a genre, and now when they're released, the studios and the filmmakers are consciously thinking, well, we're making a Christmas movie, I don't think that was the case with Die Hard. And it was released in the summer, and Christmas was not in the advertising or the posters or anything like that. But it's more like one of the older films that just happens to be a Christmas movie because it does use the holiday as a key force in its storytelling. I mean, and it's not just a setting or a backdrop. It's entirely set on Christmas Eve, but it starts as one of the most common types of Christmas movies, which is a dysfunctional family, in this case, an estranged couple, trying to patch things up and get back together on Christmas Eve. And then suddenly the terrorists take over the building and the lead character, John McClane, has to, you know, go into action and try and save the day. But the movie never lets go of the Christmas references or that element of, you know, him and his estranged wife trying to patch things up. And in music, in visual tropes, like a dead terrorist wearing a Santa hat, I mean, there are all kinds of playful ways that the film, you know, reinforces its use of Christmas. And I don't mean it to sound too academic here, but it really does. And I do get why people consider it a Christmas movie. I also should add that even though it's a violent action film, it's not an unpleasant one. And there's a sort of cheeriness, a lightness to Die Hard, which I do think in its own way captures the season.
Again, the name of the book is Christmas in the Movies, a revised and expanded edition, 35 classics to celebrate the season, by Jeremy Arnold. What is it about Christmas, do you think, that would make, even whether it's a Christmas movie or not, that would makes it the center of a story? So there's a film in here that I had not seen until just recently after reading the book, which is We're No Angels.
At least you had courage.
It didn't take courage to go to jail, just a certain amount of larceny, a little bad luck.
You did what you wanted.
What I wanted was always against the law.
I mean, speaking for myself, I got out of school, got married, and then nearly 20 years went by. Dull, uneventful years.
10 of those years I spent in prison. You'd be surprised how little happens in prison. They make an effort not to have it too exciting.
If you could do it all over again.
I'd do exactly the same. To me, the only mistake I ever made was getting caught.
You have this amazing cast of Humphrey Bogart and Peter Ustinov, and it's... it's three escaped prisoners planning to rob the shopkeeper. It's a very interesting story. It takes place around the holidays. But what is it, do you think, in a filmmaker's mind to say, yeah, this is a good time to set a movie?
Well, I would say We're No Angels is a black comedy. It's a satire, and I think a very funny one. It's a very sort of subtle comedy, but if you let yourself go with it, I think it's very entertaining. I think that setting it at Christmas time, number one, it's sort of, first of all, it allows the characters to go through what I call a Scrooge-like transformation. These three characters are killers, they're robbers, but on Christmas Eve, they're so enchanted by this family that, you know, they're planning to rob and murder, but they're so enchanted by the way they're celebrating Christmas that they decide, you know what, these people are too nice to rob and kill, so we're going to help them instead. And that's kind of funny, but it's also a variation on Scrooge transforming in A Christmas Carol, or all kinds of Christmas films have sort of bad characters who transform into kinder souls through the prism of the holiday. So that there's that, but I also think just setting it at Christmas right away puts a sort of lightness of tone into the proceedings, because when we see Christmas in a movie, our first reaction is to smile and get the sort of automatic lightness and joy that come with the season, you know, sort of beamed into us right away. And so I think that that is what helps that movie be a light satire.
There are things that I just, little tidbits that I find just fascinating about some of these movies. It is hard to believe, and I remember seeing it when it was in the theater and thinking it odd that the same guy who made Porky's made A Christmas Story.
Yeah, I know. And, you know, not only Porky's, but he also did the first slasher movie, which is called Black Christmas.
That's right. And yet, here you have a movie released in 1983 that is a Christmas classic, and there are networks that play it 24/7 on the holiday.
Ralphie, what would you like for Christmas?
Horrified. I heard myself blurted out.
I want an official Red Ryder Cup in action 2-inch Airlines Ball Air Rifle.
Ooh. No. Shoot your eye out.
Oh, no. It was the classic mother BB gun block. You'll shoot your eye out. That deadly phrase uttered many times before by hundreds of mothers was not surmountable by any means known to kiddom. But such was my mania, my desire for a Red Ryder carbine, that I immediately began to rebuild the dike.
I was just kidding. Even though Flick is getting one, I guess I'd just like some Tinker Toys.
I couldn't believe my own ears. Tinker Toys? She never buy it.
BB guns are dangerous. I don't want anybody shooting his eye out.
This is another sleeper, by the way. This movie was not a big success when it was released theatrically, and in fact, it was, I think, out of theaters by Christmas. It had opened a couple months earlier. It did okay, but it wasn't a big runaway hit, and it got elbowed out by bigger titles. And then, of course, it was rediscovered on television and home video and became the juggernaut that it is. It's interesting because, on a certain level, it's not a particularly great movie in terms of innovative filmmaking or directing. It's not really on that level, but it has such a charm to it, and it has such an enjoyable sort of tone of nostalgia. You know, it's interesting. I was talking about how Miracle on 34th Street works for kids and adults. This movie also, its secret weapon is that sort of dichotomy, because it's about a kid experiencing sort of a classic Christmas in 1940 Indiana, but it's also, through the voiceover, about his adult self remembering what happened.
Fudge.
Only I didn't say fudge. I said the word, the big one, the queen mother of dirty words, the F-dash-dash-dash word.
What did you say? That's what I thought you said. In the car. Go on.
It was all over. I was dead. What would it be? The guillotine, hanging, the chair, the rack, the Chinese water torture. Mere child's play compared to what surely awaited me.
The way that he remembers what we actually see does not always perfectly align, and there's a lot of humor that comes from that. And I think that's very relatable, because we love to laugh at ourselves and, you know, how innocent we were and how that measures up against the reality that we then come to see as adults. It's just a really charming, charming movie.
Are there films that you have included that you included because they fit the bill for the book, but perhaps just really aren't that great?
Well, I don't know. You know, when you work on a book for so long, you do tend to kind of love these babies in a way. I will say this, though. When I first started, I was not a fan of Love Actually. That's not a film mm-hmm. that I liked very much when it came out. And when I was talking to my editors and to TCM about the films that would be in the book, I at first was resistant about including Love Actually, but they were very insistent. And so I took another look at it. And I have to say, I really have come to respect Love Actually a lot more, because when you look at it as a Christmas movie, well, first of all, it has become, you know, annual viewing for millions. So there's something about it that has really captured you know, the attention of a lot of people. But as a Christmas movie, what I really think is so ingenious about it is the way that all these different characters and the different storylines that otherwise do not interact with each other in the film, to us in the audience, they come to feel like a big family. And that is like the most common theme or centerpiece of any Christmas movie, is something having to do with family. And but this is one where it's a family only to us in the audience because of the way they're all intercut with each other throughout the film. And so in one scene where they all, the famous scene in the airport where they all have a series of reunions among themselves, but we see them all together, and to us it feels like one massive reunion of all the characters. I just think as a piece of filmmaking, that's a really interesting achievement.
Released the same year as another film classic, Elf.
Buddy the Elf, what's your favorite color? Put that down.
Yeah, they were released the same day, actually.
Elf is an interesting film because I don't know that I liked it that much when I first saw it, and then I have come to love it, partially just because of my adoration of Bob Newhart.
So, Santa had a decision to make. Fortunately, when it comes to babies, Santa's a pushover. So Buddy stayed with an older elf who had always wanted a child, but had been so committed to building toys, he had forgotten to settle down. Santa! Yes, I raised Buddy. I was his adopted father.
I also find it fascinating that in your book, and so let's talk about this, that 2003, these are the only two films in the new millennium that you include, which begs the question, do they make them like they used to?
Not lately, but I don't think that they couldn't. It's been a while since there was a holiday movie that really caught on to become annual viewing. In fact, I don't even really know what the last one might be. The Holiday with Cameron Diaz, which is, you know, almost 20 years ago. There have been some really good Christmas movies since then. And some have caught on to some degree, but not to the mass scale of a movie like that or Love Actually. I do write about 7 or 8 films of the last 20 years that I think are the best of the bunch of the recent holiday films. But most of them are still sort of niche. They're just not that well known. One that has always perplexed me is the animated film Arthur Christmas, which came out in 2011 from Aardman's animation. It's just such a witty and funny and entertaining story set at the North Pole. It's about Santa getting close to retirement and which of his sons will take over and become the new Santa Claus. And it's just it's very, very clever. I can't understand why that title never caught on.
Again, film historian Jeremy Arnold's new book is Christmas in the Movies, 35 Classics to Celebrate the Season, a revised and expanded edition. It is published by The Running Press. Jeremy, what a pleasure to talk to you. I thank you very much for sharing with us. I hope you have a beautiful holiday.
Thanks. Same to you. It was a lot of fun. I always love talking Christmas movies.
Great pleasure. Thank you. Again, the name of the book, Christmas in the Movies, published by Running Press. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.
Merry Christmas, you filthy animal.